Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Glad to have you company for another hour of Dementia Chat and Music here on UK Health Radio. My guest this week was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's in her early 50s, but since then she's gone on to be an internationally recognised campaigner for dementia rights. Phyllis Fair will be joining me right after this from the Wanted Sisters.
When we first heard the sound of roller coasters rattling and rumbling through the town, going to the fairground in the cornfield where we hung out all summer long. And you said, meet me at the carousel. Just listen for Calliope's. You know where I'll be. I'll be at the fairground in the cornfield where we hung out all summer long. Meet me at the carousel.
Savannah and Kat are the Wanted Sisters, and that's title track from their latest album Carousel here on The D Word. Well, my guest this week is Phyllis Fair, who lives in Hamilton, Ontario. She was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's in her early 50s. Some people would have taken a back seat at that point, but Phyllis is a dementia campaigner working in her homeland of Canada and across the world, including addressing the United Nations. So where did Phyllis's story start?
That's a really long story, Peter. Okay. So I was a caregiver to both my grandmother and my mother. So my grandmother was diagnosed in the 60s. It, at that point, wasn't really termed Alzheimer's or dementia. It was hardening of the arteries, but it was a dementia. And at that point, it was considered a mental health disease. So families didn't talk about it. The person with the disease was brought home, and they were sat in a, like my grandmother sat in a rocking chair, and there was no medications. There was nothing. Nothing was done for her. And she was hidden away. And then in the 90s, my mother started to show signs and symptoms, but we didn't see them because they lived in British Columbia, Canada. So when they moved back to Hamilton, I thought my dad had become the best husband ever. He doted on my mom. And when he got sick, that's when we found out that something's wrong with mom. And, you know, go to the hospital, talk to my dad. And he goes, oh, yeah, she's got dementia. Well, that would have been nice for us to know ahead of time. So, you know, when I was about 48, I started to see some signs that were very concerning for myself. And there were little things like, Peter, you must know I have 9 children, and at no time did I ever use a day timer in my life. Every appointment, everything was in my head. It was there, and I never needed to write anything down. So when I was about 48, I started to see problems with that and some executive functioning around organizational skills. And I was an ICU nurse at the time, and that really scared me. So in my head, I thought, oh my goodness, this is the start of what my grandmother and mother had. So off to the doctors I went.
Yeah. You know, even at that stage, I suppose, you know, your career as an ICU nurse must have kind of given you an inkling that, you know, what this might be, I guess.
Well, I think I had it from multiple sides, from the lived experience with my mom and my grandmother and then my nursing, you know. And I will be the first one to say that even though I was doing nursing and I was trained and I thought I knew all there was to know about dementia, what I came to find out is what I knew about dementia was just a little drop in an ocean.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, that's a real key phrase, isn't it? It took you kind of nearly 5 years, I think, to get fully diagnosed. Is that right?
Yes. So I think part of the problem with that was my age. Nobody wanted to really look into it at that age. And part of it was you have to go through the whole process of ruling out other problems first. So depression, menopause, all of that stuff. So I did all of that, and the doctor says, okay, well, we'll just keep an eye on it. And I'm thinking, well, I can't work like this, because it was starting to creep into my work life. So I did take a leave of absence immediately. And then, you know, things weren't getting better. So I'll be the first one to admit, I told a white lie, Peter. I told him my migraines were back, knowing he'd send me to see my neurologist, who I knew would listen to me and would take steps. So he sent me off to my neurologist. And when I got to the neurologist, she goes, your migraines are back? And I went, no, I lied. And she goes, what's going on? So when I told her, she says, no, we've got to get to the bottom of this. So she was the one that really started to push and get more answers. So she sent me off to see the gerontologist.
And I understand you had, a little bit of a mixed time with the gerontologist. The first one kind of totally ignored you and just talked to your husband.
He did. And honestly, Pete, I sat there biting my tongue because I was afraid if I opened my mouth and said anything, nothing good was going to come out. So yeah, and she looked at my husband and said, oh, she's doing quite well. Bring her back when she can't dress herself. And I was like, what? You know, in my head, I'm screaming. So I walked out of there and I called my neurologist and went directly to her office. And she put me on medication right away. And I says, I will not go back to her. Find me somebody else. I says, I don't care where I have to go in the world. Find me the best of the best. So then I went off to see a second gerontologist who ran all the tests again and diagnosed the same thing.
It's so important that right at that beginning, your sense of self-worth is maintained, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's okay, you have a condition, but you're still more than capable of dealing with things at a time.
Exactly. And that that is taken out. Your legs are taken right out from under you when you're treated the way I was. So here in Hamilton with the Alzheimer's Society, we wrote a guide for gerontologists and neurologists on what we want when we first get our diagnosis. And that has gone out to them all. So I'm hearing things are getting better when being diagnosed. They're not great yet, but they're getting there.
Yeah, it kind of always strikes me. You know, I've done 170-odd shows, spoke to people all over the world, and I speak to people who consider themselves experts, but the people I consider experts are people like yourself, because I can never be an expert because I'm not going through what you're going through, but in going through it, you are a real expert.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the way I see it. And that's why I do the work I do, is because it's so highly important. You know, we need things to change.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Daddy saw it first before the hard years came. A wrong turn on the road back home, a few forgotten names. But the rest of us were slow to realize that the light was fading fast from Mama's eyes. Friday games, family nights, those early days just flew. Holding on and putting off what we knew we had to do. How the heart resists the breaking of the ties. But her heart had lost its path to Mama's eyes. Yet there's a God in heaven. Does he pay us any mind? If it's a story we're living, why is the author so kept the house and cared for her and worried over debt. Some nights he thought of doing a thing we'd all regret. A chilling thought, but easier to die than into a stranger turn in mama's eyes. Yet there's a God in heaven. Does he pay us any mind? If it's a story that we're living, why is the author so unkind? Now in a white room she sits rocking, looking over prairie land. Some weeks there's just no time, but we visit when we can. You can't reach her, but we touch her and we try. 'Cause we remember all the love in mama's eyes.
Definitely the best lyrics I've heard all year. Robbie Fulks from the album Bluegrass Vacation and Mama's Eyes. It's never been easier to listen to our shows here on UK Health Radio. You can listen to each show on our radio schedule. We're available four times a week. They're also available for listen again and download at the website www.ukhealthradio.com, and now in podcast format on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts. If you're unsure of how to listen to podcasts, do get in touch at tdwradio@gmail.com and we'll send you our podcast guide. My guest this week is Phyllis Fair. Mother of nine children, Phyllis had great support from her family, and in her latest dementia newsletter, she's included their thoughts on her diagnosis.
It's not just my journey. My family is involved in this journey, and I think it's highly important that they all understand and they all know, and we talk about their feelings as much as we talk about my feelings or my husband's feelings, because it's all important. It's how a family stays connected and together, and the person living with Alzheimer's or dementia is included, right? Because without that, it's the family making all the decisions. They're not hearing what my wants and wishes are. You know, it's highly important to me that we talk about everything.
I think, you know, one of your daughters hit the nail on the head when she said she was kind of like a passenger on a journey. It's almost like you're in the driving seat and everybody else is a passenger in the journey and they're making their way. And I've got to say, no, I'd never thought of it like that. I think that's a really good way of thinking about it.
Well, they are. But you know what? They're not just passengers to me. They are my support system. They're the ones that I can phone if I'm having a bad day and I'm not feeling up to driving to come and get me and take me places. You know, we've been so, I guess I want to consider myself lucky because my family is amazing. Even the grandkids have learned all about dementia. They've all taken courses through the Alzheimer's Society. Of course, there's no courses for the young kids, but we've taught them along the way. So even my 9-year-old grandson, when he was 7, they had missed the school bus. And my youngest daughter doesn't drive, and the school's over a mile away. So she's like, come on. She could have called a taxi. She didn't. She was like, okay, you want to miss the school bus? You have to walk, right? So off they go walking. And they get to an intersection, and my grandson was 7 at the time, and he stopped dead. And she goes, come on, Jace, you're going to be late for school. No, Mom, that lady across the street needs help. And she goes, Jace, come on. You're going to be late for school. Let's go. And he said, no, Mom, we can't. Nanny always says, if you see somebody that looks like they need help, always stop and ask them. So we have to go and ask her. And it was a good thing they did, because the woman had gotten out of her house and had gotten herself totally turned around and couldn't find her way back to her street. So it was along the way on the route back to school. So they ended up walking her back home and then going to school. Of course, they were late for school, but it proves that it doesn't matter what age you are, you can assist.
And I think that's the great thing about children as well, being non-judgmental. And, you know, I guess if we are going to overcome, there's still a stigma in this country associated with dementia, as I'm sure there is in Canada. If we are going to overcome it, then that hope is in those younger children as they grow up.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I will sometimes get my words mixed up terribly. And they'll look at me and they'll kind of start to laugh and they go, Nanny, you're doing it again. And you know what? They're not judgmental. They just let me know I'm doing it again and they didn't understand what I was saying. So, you know, and I think that's acceptable. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, most certainly. So, you know, you got your diagnosis, young onset, you've got a big family to cope with. Most people would probably think that's probably enough. But, you know, you've gone on to be an international advocate for dementia, amongst other things, which, you know, it takes something a bit special when you're going through all that to take that next step.
Well, you know what, Pete? I believe in a higher being. And I believe that, because I know all my nursing buddies were upset when I got the diagnosis. And they're saying, why aren't you upset about this? And I said, well, I'm upset about it. But, you know, I believe that when I was in my teens, I was shown a path that I should have been on. And I was too busy with boys, to be honest, to take it. Then again, when my mother got dementia, I was shown the path again, but I was too busy raising 9 kids and working full time to take it. So I think the man upstairs said, I'm going to give you Alzheimer's so that you will work this path, because it's something that you truly need to, it's a journey you need to be on, because you need to make change. And I vowed right from early stages, like I took a whole year after diagnosis to get my life in order, like we're supposed to, and make all my plans and, you know, do those types of, I'm a typical type A personality. Everything has its place. So I had to get everything in order and in place and to get my feet back under me, because, you know, there's a lot of stigma surrounding dementia and you internalize that stigma. So once I kind of got my feet back under me, that's when I started to get involved and push. And push back.
I have traveled down the long and twisted roads, through the darkened streets not many souls have known. I've seen beauty some may not understand. I found glory in the ruin of the best laid plan. There were times tomorrow felt so far away. It seemed as though the bitterness was here to stay. And though I pushed down on my anger through my tears, I have always felt the love of God so near. I've been everything there is to be. So come on, baby, show some kindness to me. How the hand of fate drags us all behind, like a river flowing back and forth in time, to the place we call free will, where we were always meant to be. It was written like a song so long ago. It's a long and lonely river to the sea. So come on, baby, show some kindness to me. When all the wasted years have come and gone, and there's just the empty sky to look upon, and all the dreams that pulled our hearts are a memory, I will remember what it felt like to be free. 'Cause I've been everything there is to be. Come on, baby, show some kindness to me. How the hand of fate drags us all behind, like a river flowing back and forth in time, to the place we call free will, where we were always meant to be. It was written like a song so long ago. It's a long and lonely river to the sea. Come on, baby, show some kindness to me. I've been everything there is to be. So come on, baby, show some kindness to me. Come on, baby, show some kindness to me. Come on, baby, show some kindness to me.
Tanya Tucker has just released her 26th album called Sweet Western Sound, and taken from it is that one, Kindness. Now, the D-Word is approaching our 200th show, and I've been wondering what we should do to mark the event, so I thought I'd let the listeners choose. So if there's one of our previous guests you'd like us to get back on the show, or someone you'd really like to hear from on show 200, do let us know. You can contact us on social media at Radio TDW on Twitter, the Radio TDW Facebook resource page, or by email to tdwradio@gmail.com. I'm chatting to my guest, Phyllis Fair, who is an international dementia campaigner and speaks to people all over the globe living with dementia.
Yes, and we all become friends. Believe it or not, we all become very close friends. And you know what? It's amazing. And at any time, you can ask each other anything. It doesn't matter anymore. It, you know, you don't have to hide that this is what's happened. You don't have to hide anything. You can be open and you can ask questions, and we'll each be as honest as we can to answer those questions.
And I think that's vital in any support group, isn't it? That you have a kind of bond between all those people that are going through what you're going through. And as you say, it takes away all those kind of barriers that we have in living, really.
Exactly. It does.
You also attended the United Nations, didn't you? That must have been some experience.
Yes, it was. So I think it was 2016. I went to the United Nations, and I spoke for all Dementia Alliance International at the opening ceremonies, and came back to Canada to find out that Canada was reporting on its Charter of Rights of People with Disabilities in the same session. And I had worked with them to get dementia included in it. And when I come home, I was home a week when I got the call to say, oh, we're going to the United Nations. Here's your ticket. We're off. And I was like, had I known, I would have just stayed there, because that turnaround is really hard on me. But I was able to go back and do it. And you know what? I think it was highly important, because it was the first time that I'm aware of that dementia was, or Alzheimer's was, mentioned in name in any reports back to the countries. So we got in there, got heard, and it has helped to change dementia here in Canada.
Because you do have the Charter of Rights for People Living with Dementia, which is a massive step forward, isn't it, to start with?
Yes. So the other thing, when we came back from the Geneva on the Charter of Rights of People with Disabilities, Canada was told to pull up their socks. So they held what is termed Senate hearings. Our Senate of Canada held hearings on dementia. And there was a group of us here in Ontario called ODEG, Ontario Dementia Advisory Group at the time. And there was, I think, four of us that belonged to it. And the Senate was listening to doctors and researchers and everybody, and the hearings were moving along, but they had not talked to one person living with dementia. So ODAG wrote them a letter, and we got invited to the Senate hearings to speak as experts. So we did do that. So, you know, and out of that report came a whole lot of other things. And that's when the Alzheimer's Society of Canada wrote Charter Rights of People with Dementia in 2017. So there's a lot of good work that came out of it. We also got a Canadian dementia strategy out of it. And along with the strategy, we got funding. So I have just completed, as of April 31st, research and implementation of dementia-friendly communities. And what we did was we compared Hamilton, where I live, which is a city with an age-friendly plan, to Haldimand County, who doesn't have an age-friendly plan. And we compared the two, and we did implementation of dementia-friendly communities. We also did a Faces of Dementia campaign to help fight stigma. It's absolutely phenomenal. Or at least I think it is from the patient perspective. So, you know, we've done a lot of work. You know, Government of Canada has started doing a lot of work. So I think, you know, we are making steps, although they're small, we are starting to see a change.
Yeah, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, was it? I mean, you know, you've got to make those small steps to start with. It must be difficult in Canada as well, just because of your geography, because it's a very diverse country, isn't it? You know, you're 3,000 miles from, you're almost, you in Hamilton are as far away from me as someone in British Columbia is for you. You know, it's and also exactly. You've got, you know, lots of different communities, so it's, you know.
But I will tell you, using Zoom has made it a lot smaller. So, you know, we all get together on Zoom, whether it's for research, whether it's for, you know, doing platforms or talks or presentations. I can do a presentation with Jim Mann in BC. Do you know what I mean? So even though it's big, now it is hard because we all went asked. Spring, we all went to two conferences in a row, the AgeWell conference and the CAG, which is Canadian Geriatric Association conference. They were back to back in Calgary. So, you know, even though we see each other all the time on Zoom, it's so great when we can actually get together.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, technology is not a lot to open up the world, as it were. And I guess, you know, having gone through a global pandemic as well, it was absolutely vital during those times.
Well, you know what? And I will say Zoom saved us because we got funding to do this four-year project, and it was right at the start of COVID. How are we going to do our roundtables? How are we going to interview and get our research when we can't have get-togethers? So it was really vital. We used Zoom and we used empathy interviews.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Great new music out at the moment, and a new album from Rodney Crowley's on the way called The Chicago Sessions, and that's Loving You Is The Only Way To Fly. My guest this week is Phyllis Fair, and earlier in the conversation she told us about a gerontologist who'd ignored her at her first consultation, and after all she's done since then, you could certainly forgive Phyllis for wanting to knock on that doctor's door and explain all she's achieved.
No, you know what's better than that, Pete, is when I get invited to present at something and she's sitting in the audience. I think it's so much better. What did they say? Revenge is sweet? Or you get asked to be on a panel and she's on the panel.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. No doubt about it. And locally, I mean, you do your newsletter as well, which I read. There was some really interesting stuff in your newsletter with a couple of your compatriots, the things that they wrote. And I think it's so important to get what I call the human element of all this, the family, people that have been married for a long time. And the other lady, I thought it was excellent, who said, well, if I want to get up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, hey, I'm free now. You know, I can do all these things. And exactly. I think those human stories are so important.
Yeah. You know, and the people that write the newsletter with me, we've been asked to go and give talks even. So, you know, we went out to a retirement community, and gave a talk because they were so impressed with the newsletter. They wanted us to come out and talk to them. And I have personally gotten phone calls from people that were at the talk that we've changed their lives.
And I think it's really this thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, you are still you. I know, you're not defined by the condition at all. Part of the reason why this show is called The D Word is when I was working with the Alzheimer's Society here in the UK, I ran activity groups for people living with dementia in the community, and a person living with dementia and their carer or their loved one would arrive.
Yeah.
You know, hi Pete, we'd greet them. And I'd say to the carer or the loved one, I'd say, do you know the one word we never mention when we go through that door there? And they'd look at me and say, what's that? And I'd say, dementia. Because what is the point? You know, over there, that's Irish, that's George, that's Sam. It's not Sam with dementia, or Iris with dementia, or George with dementia. You know, it's, you are you.
Yeah, I'm still me. I haven't changed. I may have a cognitive impairment that makes me a little slower to think things through. It might make, you know, take me longer to do something, but I'm still me and I can still do it. Give me the chance. So, Peter, I've got to tell you something. When I was doing that work here in Hamilton, I was having a really rough time a couple years ago at Christmas. And I was feeling sorry for myself. And I'm laying here and I thought to myself, what do I need? What would really help me? So I actually came up with the logo and we used it in our campaign here in Hamilton. And then the Greater Hamilton Health Network here in Hamilton has picked up the logo because I think it's highly important. And it goes like this. All people living in the world need love, L-O-V-E. People with dementia need love, L-U-V-E. Listening, understanding, validating, and empowering. So, you know, to me, it was highly important that that's part of my life. And I think it's highly important for everybody living with dementia that they be understood, validated, empowered.
That's great. I love it. you know, that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, in terms of things in Canada, obviously you've done a lot of work. Generally, for the normal person in the street, do you think there is more recognition, less stigma, and things are getting better?
They are, albeit slow. And, you know, the other big contributor to it is the government that's in power at the time. Because, you know, we have elections every 4 years. We fought tooth and nail to get an Ontario dementia strategy for the province we live in. We were able to get it. We got it funded. And then at the next election, it kind of disappeared. You know, we're not letting that happen here to our Canadian dementia strategy. We will not let it happen. We're fighting. We're talking to them. We're keeping them I can't think of the word I want to use, but we're holding their toes to the fire on this.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're keeping them on their toes that, you know, it can't just become a dusty document on a shelf somewhere. I mean, in the UK, we had a dementia strategy in 2012, and I sometimes fear that that is a dusty document on a shelf somewhere. Because, you know, every now and again you get...
But we redid the dementia strategy in 2017 because it had got shelved.
Hmm.
But we really pushed and got a new one. And this one, we're not letting it fall through the cracks. We're pushing forward, you know. It's funded, so there's lots of great work going on across Canada. The Empowering Dementia-Friendly Communities work we just did here actually won a Cross Canada Award for mid-size project in dementia-friendly communities. So, you know, I thought that was really good that we got recognized right across Canada for that type of work, because there's lots of that work going on, right? So I'm actually hoping to go to the conference in Helsinki, Alzheimer's Europe conference, and I want to present on the work we did here in Hamilton, but from the patient perspective, rather than the big research stuff, from the patient perspective. So I'm hoping.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I think it proves that it doesn't matter where you are, how small or big your community is. If you come up with the right idea, then, you know, go with it. But also, you know, I've got to applaud you. It takes a lot of energy, doesn't it? Because, you know, you're always battering at that door, aren't you?
That's right. You always are. But you know what? I'm not the type of person that too many people say no to, because I just keep ramming. This is the way it's going to be. Things need to change. That's, you know. So in doing so, like, I started off here in Hamilton, working as a volunteer for the Alzheimer's Society. And then I sat on their board for the first time. They had a patient advisor position. I told them they needed one and they listened. And I sat on their board for 10 years. And just last September, I stepped down from that position to take a position on Alzheimer's Canada board, because I think it's so important that, you know, people living with dementia are included and they're heard, and, you know, things are done so that they can be included, that their voices are heard.
Yeah, it's been... Obviously, you know, it's been an up and down journey for you, but, you know, you've made such a difference in that amount of time. And also, do you think, you know, early onset dementia is kind of, I think it's 48,000 people in the UK, something like that, early onset dementia. And there still seems to be this thing about, well, dementia is a form of aging. You know, people in their 50s don't get dementia. Is that improving as well?
I think it is. And, you know, and yes, I thought I was young at 48, but I've met people in their 30s. So, you know what? It can happen at any age. I don't care. And if they're having a hard time, call me. I'll help you walk through this. We'll get you places. There was a young gentleman that lived in Georgia, and he was having a really rough time. And, you know, their health system's a little different than Canada, but I made a few phone calls and I got him into the right doctors and the right clinics. And, you know, he's thriving now. And I think that's the big thing. I could have taken this disease and went, oh, poor me, and sat in this corner and felt sorry for myself and declined fairly quickly. But because I'm the type of person I am, I believe that the more you stay engaged, the more active you are, the more you keep your brain involved, I think you can develop new neural pathways around some of those areas.
Well, time's drawing its little bit to a close, unfortunately, Phyllis, but you know, you have achieved that. I think your family must be immensely proud of what you've done. And, you know, we need people like you who won't say no for an answer and also, you know, to tread that path. So, you know, I want to say thank you from, you know, us on the D Word and you know, everybody, because, you know, you're very, very important in trying to remove the stigma and improve the quality of life for people living with dementia.
Well, and I want to thank you, Pete, because it's highly important that, you know, it's one disease. It doesn't matter whether you live in the UK, whether you live in Canada, US, Brazil, wherever you live, Europe, that we're all one. So when you invited me to talk, I thought, wow, that's odd, but, you know, but I think it's highly important because we are all fighting the same fight. We're all fighting the same battle. And, you know, with the World Health Organization putting out their dementia plan, we're all one. So it doesn't matter whether you talk to somebody from Brazil or wherever. So I thank you for being so open to take that into consideration.
Thanks, Phyllis. Really appreciate it. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Yes, thank you so much.
Many thanks to Phyllis for such a great chat, and we'll be sure to keep in touch. That's it for this week. Thanks as always to our production assistant, Angela. Next week, my guest will be Helen Johns, who's just released her first book, Duck Out of Water, Mum Dementia, and Care Home Life. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.